It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 383. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. And there you will find out when I'm going to be broadcasting live, if there's any show changes, when the content is posted up. I always tweet that. And I also put it on Facebook. And you can follow me on Facebook. And that's facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. I have a jam-packed show tonight. Got lots of email that I want to catch up on. So before we get started, in today's fast-paced work environment, getting everyone in the same room for a meeting can be very challenging, especially when everybody works in different locations. That's why I use GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. It's amazing. You can collaborate online by sharing your presentation while seeing colleagues face-to-face in high definition. The video quality is so clear and natural, it's like being in the same room. All you need is an internet connection and a webcam. It's so easy. I love GoToMeeting with HD Faces, and you can try it free for 30 days. And there's a special offer. All you got to do is go to GoToMeeting.com. Click on the try it free and enter the promo code podcast. So go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the try it free button, enter the code podcast, and you can kick the tires and play with it for 30 days. The first email is from Ronnie, and he says, "Hi, Mike. I've watched your last episode of the Mike Tech Show, and I really enjoyed the content. My question is, how can I download the videos and watch other episodes? I tried downloading the FLV file and converting it to an MPEG-4 or AVI, but neither would work for me. I am somewhat of a newbie to computer tech stuff, and I wanted to learn more things from your previous episodes. Thanks for your help, and keep up the good work, Ronnie." Now, Ronnie, I put it out to the chat room before the show to ask for recommendations on what is a good free program that can be used to capture the Ustream video. I will come up with a recommendation, and I'll post it in the show notes, and I will email you a link to it. But remember, you can always go back to the archives. Now, as I said in the beginning of this show, it's 383. There are 382 previous shows that you can access the audio and all of the links for the show notes, and you can get to that by going to mtswiki.com. So that's mtswiki.com, and there you will find links to all of the past shows. So you always have the audio, but I'll have a recommendation for what you can use to capture the video. This is from Jeff, and it's about imaging a Windows 7 PC. "Hi, Mike. Your show is excellent. I have a customer. I just did a lot of data migration on one of two new PCs. Both have the same Windows 7 Pro install. If I image the PC with all the data migration programs, etc., can I simply restore it to the other same new PC without Windows coming back and say it can't activate Windows 7 or will not perform updates because it thinks the product ID has already been used? The customer doesn't want to pay to do the same work on other PCs to save billable hours. Wants a quick fix for a lot of migration. Anybody try this yet? I know in XP, there was a way to script an install. There's got to be a way to do that in Windows 7. I have not done that. So I need recommendations for what's a great way to image a system over multiple Windows systems. And that's right, it's SysPrep. Vince TV in the chat says SysPrep. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. SysPrep, I believe, will also allow for different computer names, because remember, when you're doing an image, you can't have multiple computers with the same name on the network. So not only is the key different for the product key, but you also have a different, you need a different name. So for the actual system name, hopefully SysPrep will work. I know it's an expensive solution. We used to use Altaris, and Altaris had that functionality built in. So where I came from in the corporate world, with having to deal with thousands of workstations, you need a big enterprise solution to be able to take care of imaging, you know, multiple systems, and you don't want that problem. Obviously, we can't afford a big install of Altaris, but let's take a look at Windows SysPrep as a way of doing this. I really need to start that, because I have a client that this week, a law firm, had two systems that, now they came from Dell already with Windows 7 installed, but boy, there was a lot of software I had to prep and get on to the system. And if I had an easy solution for not just installing Windows, but also getting all of these custom apps like Office 2007, then you have all of the Adobe. You have Adobe Flash. You have Adobe Shockwave, Adobe Reader. I always put 7-Zip on a system. You have the antivirus software, then whatever core software you need for that particular company. I'll be interested in other solutions. What are you doing out there if you're in this situation? That would be great. This is from Chris, and he says, I found this free portable utility called PC On Off Time that gives a nice graphical representation of the uptime of a PC for the previous 3 weeks. And it looks like it could be a very useful tool for a quick first look when troubleshooting, especially unexpected shutdowns. Naturally, there is a pro version with more features. I'm going to have this link. I've looked at this and ran the utility. It is very cool. If you are running into an intermittent problem with a machine, it's a great way to graphically look and see if there's a pattern on the shutdowns. A very cool little utility. Chris, thank you for that. And we like these utilities that we can add to our tool bag for helping us solve problems that we run into on a daily basis with clients, friends, coworkers, family, whatever your situation is. Maybe it's just for yourself and you're listening to the show. These are great utilities that you want to share and use for helping us solve problems. And any tool that you have that you haven't heard me talk about, you know, send it in with the link. So I can share it with everybody. Changing the name of a previous Windows XP user. And this is from Michael. And he says, I've been listening to your show since its inception, as well as Tech Vets, and find both of them useful and informative. I certainly like the different points of view expressed by yourself and Carrie when it comes to handling different situations. Just recently, there was a section on the podcast relating to changing the name of a previous Windows XP user to the current user. I hope it was your show, else the short-term memory is going quicker than I'd hope. I've been given a laptop by a client who had bought it from an acquaintance to clean up non-required applications and give it a general health check. When I have done, using the likes of Glary Utility, CC Cleaner, and other informative, unwanted, unrequired window services. The previous owner user's name was Pam, and my client's name is Pat. You mentioned in the show I referred to that there are registry entries which need to be changed, including the CLS ID, but for the life of me, I can't find the reference in your show notes to the link you mentioned in the podcast. By the way, he is confusing this because I don't remember ever talking about this. If I'm mistaken, and it wasn't mentioned on your show, would you have any suggestions as to what and where I would be able to find the info to allow me to do this? It depends on the individual software that's already on the system and where you would go to change it. Each software program will have different registry keys that you can edit and change. Example, if you have Office 2003 or Office 2007 or 2010, there are certain keys that you can search on and edit the name that was used to register the program. So let's say it was registered under Pam, or at least that was the name that was entered when the software was installed. You can go to those registry keys and make that change and make it to Pat or whatever you want. User account name is very easy, but keep in mind, when you have a profile on a system and the profile is, let's say, Pam, and you want to change the account name to Pat, if you go in to Control Panel, User Accounts, and you pick Pam and you just rename it to Pat, you are still using the profile directory that is probably titled Pam. So it gets confusing. If you're going to have a different user, create a new profile. Don't use an existing profile. It's just going to get too complicated. So what I would recommend is just create a new user account, make them administrator or whatever you need for that system. And then I don't know how important it is to have to go through the registry to make the changes for the software. So you got to really list out what are the software programs and what is the name. I don't believe there's one general place. I know you can for Windows because certain software applications will read what the registration name for the system is and it will just fill it in. But a user can change that during the install process. So just because you're changing that one key, it may not change it for all the software programs. So take a look at the software that's installed that you really care about changing the name. And then Google how to change the registration name for that particular app. This is from Kate, and it says, it's been a crazy couple of weeks here, and I'm catching up on the Mike Tech Show podcast. On show 381, someone wanted to know about backing up Windows Live Mail and or Windows Live Mail contacts. I sent you an email, but I'm not sure you got it. To recap, the short answer is export to a CSV file, which I believe Paul mentioned that in a voicemail that I played. But I also made a screencast several months ago that would answer the question. Here's the link. Maybe just send that guy the link along with the short answer, and it should help him out. On another subject, I have been developing a Windows setup workflow check sheet, which has kept me on track even when customers insist on telling me stories about their cats or grandchildren. I got a great story. Knowing of our shared love for check sheets, I wonder if you'd like to take a look at it. Absolutely. Please send me. Let me know one way or the other when you get around to it. Kate, send me that checklist because I have a very informal checklist of what I have for doing a Windows 7 install. I would love to see your formal list. I keep, it's very short because I have like 10 programs I have to install. You know, Java, all the Flash, the Adobe Reader. I have 7-Zip. If there's no software that is installed for burning CDs. I have CD Burner XP. So I have my favorite list of things that I always tweak and do for Windows 7. And I think with my list and your list, we could have a combined list that I'll put together and republish on a future show. And I think that would be a great idea. Ninite, I got to use that more. Vince TV in the chat recommended Ninite. And that is a way to bulk install multiple programs. And, you know, I often forget to do that. And that's something that I got to learn to take advantage of. And that's Ninite.com. And I've covered that in the past. And it's like, you know, do as I say, not as I do. And that's a utility that I keep forgetting to use. And that would really speed up setup time on deployment of new systems. Kate, thank you very much for the recommendations. This next email is from Curtis, and it's a remote access question. Hi, Mike. I'm a big fan of your podcast. I have a small computer business in Buffalo, New York, and wanted to ask you this question. I have a customer that has a server with Windows 2008 server at their main site. They have an access database program that their other site needs access to. I did set up remote desktop to access the server and created a username and password for them to log on to. But I hear you said in one of your past shows that that was not a secure connection in which I need. What other secure programs should I use to remotely access the server? Can you give me some advice on how to set this up? They have 7 sites that need access to this server. Hardware-wise, the server is an 8-core Xeon server with 8 gigs of memory, and I believe they have enough bandwidth service. It's Time Warner wideband service, 35 meg down, 5 meg up. Thank you in advance. Curtis, great question, and there's a couple solutions, and it's all VPN, virtual private network. You can use RDP, but it's not a secure protocol. And there's 2 ways you can go. A software-only based solution, which is Hamachi. And that's Log Me In Hamachi. And I've talked about this. There's a free and a pro version. The pro version is if you need more than 16 systems. Well, here it's only 7 sites. You can try the free version, which is certainly very easy to set up, where you would create an account for Log Me In Hamachi, and at each of the sites, you would create part of this network that all belongs to this Hamachi network. So the 8 sites in total would all be part of this one network that you created, and it will create virtual tunnels back to the main system with the database. So sort of like a hub and spokes here, that now you could use RDP over the Hamachi link, and now you have the RDP and it's encapsulated, and around it, it's secured using the Hamachi software. So that's one way, but if that slows down and you don't get the performance, then what you want to try is the hardware-based, which is going to be more expensive and more complicated to set up. And that's where you need to put routers at each location that's capable of setting up an encrypted tunnel, and that you can set it up at each end. Cisco routers, Linksys, there's lots of routers out there. And you might want to start, if Hamachi doesn't work for you, then the hardware-based solution, you might want to start getting to and testing it between the sites. And, you know, just pick one site, pick another one, and then try it out and then see how that goes. Now, I know the host that has the database has great bandwidth, but what about the bandwidth at all the other sites? You need really good bandwidth at both ends, and it's the uplink at where the database is hosted that is going to be your bottleneck, and you only have 5 meg. I bet you, you can upgrade that very inexpensively, because with like my Verizon Fios, I have 35 meg up, 35 meg down, and it was not much to get that uplink to be 35 meg instead of 5 meg. So you might want to look into that and see if you could bump up the uplink, and the same with the other locations, and that would be really, really help you with performance. I hope that helps you, Curtis, with a couple things you can test out. This is from Brandon. He says, another utility, and the utility is D7. And he says, I wanted to email you about another utility that I thought your listeners would like. The name of the program is D7, and he has the link, which will be in the show notes. The program can be used to complete numerous post-infection cleaning actions, such as cleaning proxy settings, resetting network interfaces, repair and reset Windows firewall, repair IE8, system file checker, repair system restore, repair WMI, WBEM, re-register the Windows installer, download Windows Installer 4.5, repair Windows update services, clear the principaler, and fix exebat.com associations. And this is just a short list of what this program can do. When you start D7 on an infected computer, it scans certain entries in the registry to see if they have been modified. It can also complete maintenance tasks like delete temp files for all profiles, empty recycle bin, etc. I recommend that users visit the above page and read about each task that this great program can accomplish. If you do not know what you are doing, you can crash your computer, so read the site first. There are also some videos on the site as well that describes how to use D7 to disinfect a computer. I want to thank Brandon for putting us on to D7. I think I mentioned that in the past a long time ago. Worth mentioning, because over the last few weeks, I have been discussing some great utilities that everyone can use to help you fix all of the issues after you've removed an infection. Because remember, once the system's infected, they break so many things within Windows that you need a quick way to be able to repair all these things that are broke. Email from Brian. Story from the trenches. Hello, Mike. In the spirit of the show, I wanted to share a consulting story with you I experienced with one of my clients yesterday. It's a lesson in patience, as I made a somewhat rookie mistake trying to get the issue resolved quickly, but the method I use to recover from the mistake is one that will definitely be added to my bag of tricks. I have a client that's about an hour and a half drive from my home base. I'm able to support this client mostly through VPN and remote desktop. I received a call from one of the staff stating that she was having issues with her XP computer freezing after opening a Word document and even after rebooting. She continued to have issues with sluggish performance. I logged in and took a look at the event logs for any clues as to what might be happening. There in the logs were some errors to reference to zsr.dll. I've had issues with this module in the past with other HP print drivers and have found that uninstalling and reinstalling the printer usually fixes the issue pretty quickly. Unfortunately, this thing had the print spooler so choked down I couldn't do anything with it. NetStop spooler froze the PC. Trying to delete jobs from the printer froze the PC. Anything at all that I did with the printer or the print spooler ended up requiring a reboot. Things were taking a long time and my client needed to get back to work. I broke out the cleanspl.exe utility from Microsoft that is supposed to clean out the print spooler and get things back to a default state. Unfortunately, instead of reading the "Are you sure you want to do this?" warnings, there's the rookie mistake. I just said okay to everything. When the computer booted back up and plugged the printer back into the USB port, it didn't even recognize it was there. Uh-oh. Anyway, to make a long story short, after a lot of fast and furious Googling, I came across another utility from Microsoft called printmig.exe. As I understand it, this utility is designed to migrate printer settings across a large deployment of backing up registry entries and drivers having to do with printing. I loaded the utility on a clean XP virtual machine I have, just for these sorts of situations, ran the tool, copied the exported file, installed the utility on my client's machine, imported the file from the virtual machine, and bingo, we were up and running. So the lesson here, of course, haste makes waste, but it's also good to look at the fact that due to making the mistake and finding a resolution for it, I learned something. I've discovered a new utility that I'm sure I'll be able to use in the future. Thanks for the show, Mike. It's greatly appreciated. All my Christmas shopping has been done using your Amazon link, and I continue to ask my friends and family members to do the same. Hope you have a great Thanksgiving. Take care. Brian, thank you very, very much. That's a great story to share and a great way to wrap up the last email by mentioning if you are buying anything from Amazon, like Brian, use my Amazon links, amazon.mikenation.net or miketechshow.com/Amazon, and your price stays the same, but anything you buy from Amazon, it kicks back a commission to the Mike Tech Show to help support the show. And right now, it's Christmas time for shopping, and I want to thank everybody who's been buying the Amazon Fire Kindle device for $199. Great, great Android device that I think is going to dominate the Christmas season. And I thank everybody who's been using my link to make that purchase. I appreciate it very, very much. It's great to be able to recommend such a great place of shopping like Amazon. And I know almost everybody has used Amazon. And I love, they have a very liberal return policy. And they are so good for the holidays, especially in getting you quickly shipped everything that you're buying. And they stand behind everything. I've never had an issue that they had not been able to resolve beyond my satisfaction. They have just taken care of me beyond whatever I wanted. Couple things. Next week, being the Thanksgiving holiday, and of course it's on Thursday, there'll be no Mike Tech Show, so I'll be back the following week. Today is my birthday, and I want to thank everybody for your great wishes. My Facebook wall, thank you so much. The emails I received, I really enjoyed it. It's been great. Thank you so, so much. And in that vein, I haven't been playing music at the end of shows, but tonight I have a music selected from Liz Longley, and it made me think back 2 years ago. Barbara, who's Citizen X in the chat, spent a lot of work putting together an incredible birthday message to me, asking everybody to wish me a birthday, that's regulars in the chat. But she knows my passion for the music of Liz Longley, and she contacted her. Give a listen.
Hey, Mike, it's Liz Longley here. Just wanted to say happy birthday. Hope it's a great one. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Mike. Happy birthday to you. And many more. Don't stop. I like where this is going. You've got a way of coming over me like rain in June. Tongue tied, your body warm to the touch, and you're terrified
that makes two of us now. Just the two of us now. Have you ever felt so alive as I feel with you tonight? So deep in your arms. And have you ever had a love so real that through your veins you could almost feel a rush of blood to your heart? With one kiss, you cover every inch of my skin in pure bliss. And all the sound of you aching for more. Steady as you unfold me and unleash a desire that will never die. Have you ever felt so alive as I feel with you tonight? So deep in your arms. And have you ever had a love so real that through your veins you could almost feel a rush of blood to your heart, to your heart? The bare moon shining through the window, our shadows dancing on the wall, the pulse racing like the thunder as we surrender to it all. Well, have you ever felt so alive as I feel with you tonight? So deep in your arms. And have you
That is Liz Longley and the song Rush from her CD Somewhere in the Middle. And I will have a link to her website. And Liz is, of course, from the Philadelphia area. She was born and raised in Philadelphia. So it was great finding her years ago. Some songs on GarageBand.com, and which is no longer in existence. And that's how I discovered her, by just searching for local artists. And it's just great. She has a tremendous voice. I want to thank all of you for supporting the Mike Tech Show and downloading and staying subscribed. Thank you so very much. If you're celebrating the Thanksgiving holiday next week, have a great Thanksgiving holiday. Have a safe and happy holiday, and I will be back the week after. Thank you so much. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.